There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you?
Welcome to another edition of 'Cause I Wanna and You're Gonna Like It. This week, I wanna see some, lesser-known animated classic, maybe from a defunct distribution company, with the voice talents of Captain Archer, George Kennedy, and how about Barney Fife? Yeah! Yeah, and maybe some songs by, I don't know, Randy Newman. And what do you know, 1997's Cats Don't Dance fills the bill! Directed by the guy who directed The Emperor's New Groove, The Rocketeer, okay, and Chicken Little. Oh boy. Well, I'm sure it's fine. I'm your host, Max, the singing capybara Levine, and over there is your host, Mike, the river dancing yak loose. Top of the morning to you, Mike.
Oink, oink.
Is that what yaks do? I don't know.
Yes. I looked it up.
And the yak goes oink, oink. Sure, why not?
Sure.
Okay. But before we get to that, we have
oink.
Our
poll question.
Last week, we were dying to know.
But we got better.
What is your favorite treasure hunt movie?
Ooh.
Well-known mystery author Tony Kellner says Muppet Treasure Island.
Ooh.
Oh, because they got the Long John Jim Hawkins dynamic right. The songs are terrific, and everything's better with Muppets. Well, that is absolutely unarguable.
I've got Jimmy.
He's Jimmy.
Wasn't that Tim Curry?
Oh, it's Tim Curry's one of his greatest roles.
Oh, that was a lot of fun.
That was. I thought pirates had talking parrots on their shoulders. Parrots? No, I've never heard that. That's weird. He's the guy with the lobster.
Oh, okay.
Yep. I definitely enjoy the ancient puzzles aspects of some treasure hunt movies, statues with moving parts and sliding doors and tombs and the like. I remember greatly enjoying That Man from Rio. For the Inca or Mayan aspect of his treasure hunt, and because I like Jean-Paul Belmondo. I do not know this one.
I do not either.
We're going to have to look into this one. That Man from Rio. Okay.
Huh.
Diamonds Are Forever also comes to mind, as the locations
really?
Of the diamonds seemed clever the first time I saw it.
They were shoved up the bum of a corpse. Like, really? Okay.
And it is one of the few Bond movies. They're also hidden in a chandelier.
Sure.
As
sure
part of
they
the chandelier.
Are. You string those up. We'll see how long it takes you.
And it's one of the few Bond movies I can still watch and enjoy.
Huh. Really?
I never thought of that as one of the ones that would age better, but it does have Mr. Wint and Mr. Kidd.
Yeah, but no, it does not age well at all. It's terrible. Oh, well. I'm glad you enjoy it, Dave. Okay. Treasure.
Matt Reisman says, it's got to be Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yeah. I mean, it's one of my favorite movies, and it's a treasure hunt movie. Yeah, I think the Holy Grail counts as the treasure, sure. You might even say it's the Holy Grail of treasures.
But Tyler really, Stewart, it's the friends we made along the way.
Yep. Tyler Stewart says, Raiders of the Lost Ark, hands down. I think we're going to be hearing a bit of that.
Oh.
Regan McStravick says, ooh, boy. There's a bunch of good ones, and they do cross genres quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Raiders of the Lost Ark, for sure.
Yes.
Treasure of the Sierra Madre.
Oh,
that's interesting. Eh, okay, I can see that. It's a mad, 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 Hell, even a lot of the sillier rom-coms. What? The Sure Thing, Better Off Dead, Some Kind of Wonderful could be considered treasure hunts if the treasure is, you know, teenage Nookie.
Ah.
Okay, you know what? Why not? And I missed Romancing the Stone. Oh, okay.
There's a stone in it.
Interesting. I never really thought of teen rom-coms as treasure hunts, but sure.
Oh, I think that the search for the loss of something could be considered a treasure.
Dr. Professor Rebecca Pelkey says, it can be a tough genre for me. Lots of colonial BS, stealing sacred artifacts from non-white people, Yeah, but they don't know what to do with them. And stereotyping and dehumanizing said non-white people in various ways, making them appear to be the bad guys for protecting what's theirs, that's fair, and or making them background obstacles for the white protagonist. Movies with pirates can be the exception sometimes. That said, I like the Goonies.
Wait, pirates are okay because they're just stealing from people and killing them. Okay, that's
well,
fine.
They stole a lot from white people. Come on.
That's true.
They plundered the Spaniards and the English and everybody. Interesting. And of course, Goonies never say die. Byron Ho also says, Goonies, there's just something about being a kid and hunting for pirate treasure. Arr.
Yes.
Arr indeed, Byron. Mm. Thank you. Charles Forsyth says, I can tell you about the last treasure hunt movie I saw. It was The Fountain of Youth, starring Jim Halpert and a bored Natalie Portman.
Wow.
I mention this because it's essentially had the same narrative structure of every other treasure hunt movie. People go looking for a treasure, and the most eager to find it fare poorly, and the most reluctant fare the best. That's actually a good point. That really is a trope in a lot of those movies.
It's true.
The best execution of this was Raiders of the Lost Ark. I'll also say that it's a mad.
There's
mad,
only
mad,
five
mad,
of
help
them.
Help me, mad world. And the Goonies are great because they have so much fun with the genre. But most of them turn out to be formulaic and kind of dull, like the aforementioned Fountain of Youth.
Ooh, and it was bad.
Now, if you consider the taxation of galactic trade routes to be a kind of treasure.
And I don't.
We don't. We don't. No one does. Stop it.
We don't like pod racing either, just saying. Did no, you we see don't. Fountain of Youth?
I did not.
Oh my gods, is it horrible?
Oh dear.
It is
even
so
with
dumb.
Natalie Portman?
Yeah, I'm sorry, but you know, I think honestly the plant from The Professional does a better job in that film than she does, but I don't
Ouch.
Blame her. Yeah.
Oh dear. Well, of course, the greatest treasure of the 20th century is the Tatum, and the inventor thereof, Richard Tatum, says, The Ninth Gate. Solid film version of the Club Dumbass. Yes, the book is better, but... Oh, a creepy
it's a French
atmospheric
word meaning dumbass.
A creepy, atmospheric, twisty rabbit hole of a movie with a crazy ending. Also, one of those rare Johnny Depp movies where he's not covered in makeup and doing a bit.
It's true.
Problematic director, yes indeed.
Yep.
Still, okay, interesting.
Say our episode on The Ninth Gate. I really like that film. I don't know why. I just really like that film. And Frank Langella is, like, suitably creepy in that film.
He's very creepy.
Yeah.
Brian Mundo says, hold on to your hats, folks. The what? Fifth Element.
What?
Hunting for that Fifth Element treasure to save the world. All right, that's fair.
Oh, Brian.
That's kind of what it is. They're looking for the rock MacGuffins.
Sure.
Jamie Kleinert simply says, Snatch. What do I know about diamonds?
Mm.
They're shiny.
And expensive.
Still haven't seen that. I gotta see that.
I did see it. I just don't remember it. I think Snatch is sort of a higher budget version of Lock, Stock, and Two.
Yeah. Isn't it the same director?
Yeah, Guy Ritchie. Yeah, yeah. Okay, he did that and then Layer Cake and Sherlock Holmes. And
Kelly J. Cooper says, I wasn't sure if I had one, but then folks reminded me that The Goonies fits the bill. So definitely that. Such a charming movie.
See our entire episode on The Goonies. But just remember, none of us didn't like it. I don't remember if you liked it or not, but I got mail for that one.
I thought it was a good kids movie. But And of course, from that treasure-laden wilderness where only the strong go in search of the rare and precious Canada.
Yukon?
Vince, Yukon. Yeah, well, I can if you want.
Yes, please.
Okay. Other than the search for the villain's secret planet, in Star Crash, The Adventures of Stella Star,
dear.
Academy Award winner.
You know, we haven't watched that.
But like I said to Vince, the treasure was really the David Hasselhoff we found along the way.
And discarded.
Yes. I think Raiders of the Lost Ark has a really great search for a treasure plot full of action, adventure, and humor, and everything else that makes a great film. Yep, can't argue with that one.
Mm.
And of course, that fine Irish lad, Beel O'Lading, top of the morning.
Shamrock Shake.
Quote, 350 G's. Do you hear what I'm saying? 350 G's in Santa Rosita State Park, buried under a big W.
Ah, cha cha cha.
It's a mad.
Five. There's only five.
Nope. There's four. World, 1963, deserves a slot in our tour of treasure-hunting films. The film begins with a fatal auto accident. However, before he dies, the victim alerts Good Samaritans, who seek to help him, of buried treasure he's hidden under a big W. They all dash off to get the money with hilarious hijinks along the way. Planes, trains, and automobiles. You know, that's true. Those are all involved.
Yep.
It's a tour de force of mid-century American comedy with Sid Caesar, Ethel Merman, that well-known comedian, Buddy Hackett, Mickey Rooney, Milton Berle, Jonathan Winters, and cameos of just about every comedian you can name, including, I think, the Three Stooges.
I think Frankie Avalon's in it, too.
He probably is. The film is probably one action sequence too long, but you cannot help but be charmed by it.
It's got Spencer Tracy, too.
Probably the most ambitious American comedy until Airplane. Okay, that is fair.
I don't think I would call Airplane ambitious because the scope, the number of people, the locations in Mad World is just gigantic, whereas Airplane takes place, let's see, on an airplane.
Pretty so, much. Yeah. It's not quite as epic in scope.
No. It is of its time, though. It is also like almost 3 hours long, I think.
It is very long, and it feels very long.
Yeah. All just to watch Ethel Merman slip on a banana peel. That's the whole thing.
Well, come on. I'd pay to see that. Come on.
Yeah.
And, I see the little blinking light is going, and we have a message from my own little hidden treasure, Doris Hempelmeyer.
Where's that voice coming from?
Hello, Max Mike Movies. Hi, Max. This is Doris Hempelmeyer here to answer your poll question, which happens to be, what's your favorite treasure hunt movie? Well, kind of all of them, but I'll narrow it down. I'm going to go with Romance in the Stone. It's fun. It's silly. Boy, is it silly. But it's fun. And there's a big green stone at the end. So, you know, there's your treasure. But the other one I'm going to go with is, you probably haven't seen this, but I really recommend it. And that's The Lost City. The Lost City is an homage to the Romance in the Stone, and some of it is, oh my God, it's so funny. And there's a really interesting treasure twist at the end. So those are my two I'm giving you. Anyway, have a wonderful week, and I look forward to hearing today's episode because I like that movie. And I'll talk to you next week. I can't wait to see what the next one is. And I'll see you later, Max. Bye.
Okay, another one for Romancing the Stone.
Yeah.
I have never seen The Lost City, have you?
Never heard of it.
No, don't know it, but okay. What about you, Mike? You mad Mike.
Sorry, I just like hitting you.
Yes, I know.
How about King Solomon's Mines? Remember that one?
Oh, yep. That actually is one of the ones I had.
Really? King I Solomon's was kidding. Mines.
No.
I remember it being very dull.
The one with Stuart Granger, the original one?
No.
It's kind of... Oh, you mean the one with Richard Chamberlain?
Yeah. Or?
Oh, God. We are going to go and look for the treasure. I am terribly excited. Oh, no. We are in danger. I am so frightened.
By the way, do you have a duck? That is so deep, it's not even worth mentioning, except I did. Yep. I remember seeing it. I remember that came out right after Raiders or the second Raiders. That's when people were like, oh, look, those treasure movies is making money. We should make a treasure movie.
But seriously, what would yours be?
I mean, I'd probably have to go with Raiders. I kind of think Raiders, except for the little tiny nitpicky things that we mentioned when we did Raiders a while back, it's kind of perfect. The pacing is great. You like the characters. It does exactly what it sets out to do really well. The music is unforgettable. Harry being Harry and having a good time. And admittedly, you know.
Marion.
And the actress playing Marion, whom we can't remember her name. I'm sorry. It's, hey, that's what age does to you, kid.
Yep.
I'm not given enough to do, but, you know, whatever. It's got John Rhys-Davies. Oh, what an incredible coincidence. John Rhys-Davies is in that movie, and he's in this week's movie. But I'd probably go with Raiders, too, because it's pretty up there. How about you, though? What is your favorite, or one of your favorite treasure movies?
One of my favorite, I got to say, the original King Solomon's Mines, the one with Stuart Granger, it's, again, not a brilliant movie, but you can see where so many of the other adventure movies used it. I mean, there's a ton of references to it in Raiders. Mm-hmm. So historically, honestly, one of the ones I unabashedly just enjoy, even though it's, shall we say, flawed, is the Rankin-Bass version of The Hobbit.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think is a lot of fun, and there are elements of it that are way truer to the book than any other version of The Hobbit. I'm looking right at you, Jackson.
Action Jackson?
Jackson. For every action, there is a Jackson.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah, so I would go with those.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, we all, of course, want to thank everyone for their answers because they're awesome.
These are really cool answers. Also brought up some movies we might want to see.
Yeah.
I don't know that man from Rio.
Me either.
And now I kind of maybe see The Lost City.
Yeah. Yeah. But not watching Diamonds Are Forever again.
I've seen that a few times. Oh, a few. I like that. I like it. Come on.
It's terrible. See our entire episode on every James Bond movie ever made.
But we want to know more stuff, and inspired by this week's movie, I just want to know, who's your favorite cartoon animal?
Oh.
Not just animated figure. It's got to be an animal. Could be an anthropomorphic animal. That's fine. But favorite cartoon animal?
Like Bumpy the Wonder Pony.
Mine, obviously, is Mike. And at the end of the show, we will tell you...
I'm not animated.
Well... You're a little tired sometimes, but I wouldn't go that far. Remember? At the end of the show, we will tell you the secret treasure of how to find the way.
Sigh, he's going to give us our email address. Big deal. Some treasure.
Oh, you're no fun anymore.
Hassan Chop!
Open Sarsaparilla, open Saskatchewan. But before we get onward, we also have something. This week's mailbag.
What?
Listener mail.
Yes, from that Teutonic... correspondent, Herr Franz Josef Halbwitz.
Yeah, yeah.
Who tells us, in your National Treasure episode, Max snickered a bit at the kaboom in the Charlotte still being possible after a couple of centuries. Well, oh dear. Traditional black powder, the only gunpowder until the end of the 19th century, is not a chemical compound that can degrade.
Uh-oh.
It's a simple mixture of just three wholesome, all-natural ingredients. Charcoal, sulfur, and saltpeter. Oh, and you need diamonds and a big...
bamboo.
Big bamboo tube to make a crude cannon to shoot the gorn. Sorry. Keep it dry, and it has a shelf life of plus or minus forever.
Oh.
Wow, really? In fact, you can make some yourself by redacted. Oh, come on!
Max,
really?
Just go to Vasquez Rocks, and all the stuff's just laying around.
Oh, yeah, okay. And apparently saltpeter is like bright pink or something.
Orange.
People are still finding live ordnance from the Civil War, sometimes the hard way.
Yikes.
Wow, okay, well... I acknowledge my failure, and tip of the spiked helmet to you, Herr Halbwitz.
Boy, that's twice from Max.
Keep us honest.
Keeping us honest because...
Yeah. Keeping me honest.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lost cause with Mike, but...
Let's see. What's that quote? Oh, yes.
Yes. Very well put. Very well put. But now... the facts. Cats don't dance. Budget. $32 million.
Uh-oh.
Box office.
Uh-oh.
Well, you know, judging it by the box office take, it's really unfair. These things are very complicated.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. 3.5
wow.
million. Wow. Oh, that's for the U.S. and Canada.
I knew it tanked. I didn't realize it tanked that bad.
It tanked hard.
Oh, dear. Ouch.
Yeah.
I saw it.
Warner Brothers, which got the distribution rights after acquiring Turner Pictures, who were the ones who technically produced this, made very little effort to promote the film, apparently.
Ah.
The only merchandising, and I'm still not sure how this worked, was a Subway tie-in.
Uh-huh.
Now, it didn't make money. Not many people saw it, but it was nominated for 8 Annie Awards, the Animation Awards, and it won 2 for Best Animated Feature and Best Music in a Feature Production. One wonders what the other nominees were that year.
Yeah, we'll come back to that.
It was the first non-Disney winner in either category.
Wow.
The poster parodies at the end of the movies are all movies from Warner Brothers, New Line Cinema, or Turner Entertainment.
Wait, what?
Yeah, the filmmakers originally wanted to do parodies of other famous films like The Sound of Music and Star Wars, but they abandoned them because they would have, you know, had to pay licensing fees.
Well, they've already spent $30 million. What's another 10 or 15?
Yeah. This film, technically, and I'll try to control your shock, is inspired by Gene Kelly's life. Kelly served at MGM for most of his musical career.
Served?
The film features Mammoth Pictures, which is a parody of MGM, complete with Louis B. Mammoth being a tribute to Louis B. Mayer, and the Mammoth Picture logo being based on the MGM logo, but, you know, with an elephant.
Still, sure. A lion, right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Name's Leo.
Gene Kelly was also an uncredited choreography consultant on this movie and died soon after, which I'm pretty sure is unrelated.
That's just mean.
That's true. This is Turner Feature Animation's last film. No. During production, Ted colorized the crap out of it. Turner sold all of his companies to Time Warner, and Turner Feature Animation was absorbed into Warner Brothers Feature Animation. Darla's butler, Max, in addition to having the best name in the movie, is a reference in name and appearance to Eric von Stroheim's sinister character Max von Mayerling from Sunset Boulevard.
Which is great for a kid's film, because kids love Sunset Boulevard.
And everyone remembers that Eric von Stroheim was 35 feet tall.
Especially the William Holden floating face down in the pool part. Kids love that.
Yeah. Yep. Darla Dimple is, I know this will shock some people, a spoof of Shirley Temple.
What?
But her name was taken from another child star of the 30s, Darla Hood.
Sure, Little Rascals. She was the girlfriend of Alfalfa.
She was the girl. I think there's only one or two.
Yeah.
The goat in this, whose name I don't remember, is voiced by acting great Hal Holbrook.
Mm.
This was his first voice-only role in a theatrical film. He later voiced Amphitryon in Hercules, 1997, and Mayday the Fire Truck in Planes, Fire and Rescue of 2014, Mike's favorite movie.
No, but the name was Cranston, just so you know. Cranston.
Thank you. Ah, as in Lamont?
Sure.
Why not? There isn't a lot else here. The songs are, in fact, done by the ubiquitous Randy Newman.
Yeah.
In the late 90s, if there was an animated movie, you didn't even have to tell him. He just appeared.
Hello, Newman.
Exactly. Be writing song for you now, the baby. Yes, he sounded exactly like Tom Petty.
Was that who that was?
Well, that's all I've got, unless you've got something.
No, not really. Okay. But you brought up the one thing that I kind of found out, which was Mark Dindal. Other films that he directed were Emperor's New Chicago and the Garfield movie.
Oh, yeah.
So all big winners.
I thought that at least one of the Garfield movies actually did make a lot of money. I forget which one.
I just don't know why. But,
because everybody hates Monday.
Lasagna.
Yeah.
Odie.
Sending Nirmal to Abu Dhabi. Yeah,
whatever.
Anyway. But now let's get to the most important part of any animated film. The plot. Okay, so we've got a really original, never-before-done story here. A small-town guy in the 1930s decides to go to Hollywood and become a big star. Wow! But here's the twist. It turns out the reality of showbiz doesn't match his fantasy. Except eventually it does through the power of dreams and friendship and stuff. And everyone becomes rich and famous and happy forever. Okay, now make most of the characters cartoon animals. What? And factor in an element of speciesism, because our hero is a cat named Danny, and he discovers that despite being fully sentient, capable of speech, and possessing opposable thumbs, animals are second-class citizens in Hollywood, and the true stars are humans?
White humans.
White humans. Well, Max is kind of greenish-gray, but...
We'll come back to Max.
Like the terribly subtle Darla Dimples, who in no way resembles any real child stars, and secretly hates animals. Danny isn't satisfied with just being one of the boys in the chorus who just hopes you like their show, and wants more for himself and his new friends for life, including an elephant voiced by John Rhys-Davies, a turtle voiced by Don Knotts, and a slinky she-cat voiced by Jasmine Guy, but not sung by her. The evil Darla tries to sabotage them, but gets foiled because she is a villain.
Boo.
The animals all sign the standard rich and famous contract. Racism is destroyed, and everything is good forever. Eat your heart out, Zootopia. The film.
So you have not seen this before, correct?
I have never seen this before. Have you?
Yes, I saw it in the theater when it came out. I was the guy.
You were it?
Apparently so.
You alone paid $3.5 million to watch that movie. That was very generous of you.
I used to go see almost... I actually went and saw in the theater the movie Rockadoodle.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I went with our friend Libby and saw Rockadoodle. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
We were nearly alone. You may be surprised. But yeah. No, I did see Cats Don't Dance when it came out in the theater. Okay. Huh. So, yeah. And at the time, I kind of liked it.
Okay.
Cool. We'll get back to that. But
let's find out, yeah.
Yeah, we have a cast here. Now, they're all voices, of course. There's no actual faces because they're all drawn.
Here is one I would not have thought of for a musical, and that's Scott Bakula.
Yeah.
And he does the speaking and the singing. And, you know, he's not bad.
No, he's not bad.
He can be very likable. I have to say the character is very annoying at times.
He's a little, what's the word I want here? He's a little bright and cheery, like over the top.
Yeah.
And I ought to say, though, I'm not a big Scott Bakula fan. I don't dislike him, but like the character of Jonathan Archer was both racist and misogynist, and I had a real problem with him in Enterprise. I never watched, what was that, Quantum Leap?
Quantum Leap.
I never watched
very
that.
I liked that show. I watched that a lot, and he was very likable in that.
But I think he's really likable in this. You're right. I think Danny is actually a very likable character. Just a little bit much.
He's kind of, what we would say now, kind of a lot.
Yeah.
Jasmine Guy is Sawyer. And if there is anybody whose voice sounds like a cat, it is Jasmine Guy. I do not understand. Jasmine Guy not only is a trained singer, she danced with Alvin Ailey.
Oh.
You know, she could have sung. I don't know. Well, I guess they wanted a bigger musical name.
Well, then why didn't they just let Natalie Cole do the voice?
I don't know, because I don't think Natalie Cole can act.
I don't know. Yeah. She can sing certainly well.
She can sing, but I don't think she's an actor. It's just not what she does.
Yeah, that was weird. I don't know Jasmine Guy from anything, do you?
Yes, she was in... she's done a bunch of stuff, but the main thing I remember her from is that spinoff of The Cosby Show, A Different World.
Oh, okay.
She played Whitney Gilbert, and... She was one of those characters who was fun to dislike until they decided they wanted her to be more sympathetic.
Oh. She does fine. She doesn't have a huge part. I mean, it's... Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's fine. I didn't know she could sing, but I don't know why they split it up either.
Natalie Cole, you know, who had a great career as being the daughter of Nat King Cole, she does fine.
I think
she has
kind of
one and a half songs.
Unforgivable. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, I actually hated that little thing she did with where they spliced her in.
That was creepy. That was just creepy.
Some people said, she just wanted to sing with her dad. Well, she didn't have to have us hear her do it. And say, it felt very Forrest Gumpish to me. I didn't like it.
Mm.
Otherwise, she's fine. I mean, she has a nice voice. I had no problem with
her. Yeah, she has one solo and part of a duet, and that's it.
Yeah. Ashley Peldon as Darla Dimple was perfect.
She is, I think, the best thing in the movie.
I don't think she's the best thing, but she's really good.
She is so good. Darla, in general, I think, is a fantastic character. The facial expressions, the design, and her voice is perfect for it. Perfect, I tells you.
Yeah, she was great.
Lindsay Ridgway does the singing for her. Again, nails it.
Well, the other thing, too, is that with Sawyer, you could tell the difference between the speaking and the singing. I thought with Darla, it was much more seamless.
Much more seamless. They got a much better match there.
There was a great Darla song, which just made you hate her, and it was great.
Yep. There's Kathy Najimy as Tilly the Hippo.
I mean, you heard the voice, you knew who it was instantly.
Immediately. And she's basically playing a very similar character. She usually does the hyper-cheerful... hyperkinetic, and she's fine, and it's fun to put that in a hippo because she's this massive force of nature.
Is she a Big Fat Greek Wedding? No.
No.
She was Sister Act. That's what it was. Sister Act and Witches, wasn't it? Wasn't she in that?
She was in...
Hocus Pocus.
Hocus Pocus, that's
she what I'm
in that.
Of.
She's so much fun in that.
Yeah. And she, if anything, is maybe a little bit more upbeat than Danny is, if that's possible. But she's delightful. She's fun. Yeah. We like her. And then I didn't recognize his voice, but John Rhys
Davies. I didn't either. He plays Woolly Mammoth. He sounds very different.
Yeah.
He's always fun. I'm always happy to hear John Rhys Davies gets a job.
Yeah.
John Rhys Davies is awesome. We got George Kennedy... Because when you think comedy, animated film, you say, get me George.
I guess he's there.
He's fine, actually. I didn't recognize his voice at all.
Me either. No. And I also didn't recognize René Auberjonois as Flanagan.
That I did, mainly from doing The Little Mermaid as the chef. There's some elements of that in there.
Oh. I actually also know him from an episode of The Bob Newhart Show where he actually plays a Frenchman, which is actually pretty fun. Well, but yeah.
You know, everybody knows him from somewhere. The man is incredibly prolific. He's done been in everything.
The gun in Betty Lou's handbag. I'm sorry, Betty Lou Gerson plays
Betty
Francis.
Betty Lou Gerson, one of the legends of voice acting. She went all the way back to 101 Dalmatians.
I don't know her.
She is, she's a minor part, but she's in it. She was the narrator in Cinderella.
Yes, I know who she is. I just didn't know her name.
Yeah. And she is the nurse in Help Me! Help Me!
Yeah.
The Fly. Yeah, she's, you know, fine. She's playing a very generic character. Ah, yes, old Hollywood, washed up actor who happens to be a
fish.
Sure, because why not? We got Hal Holbrook.
As Cranston, the guy.
Hal must have needed the money, I guess, since they took Evening Shade off. I don't know.
He's fine.
Yeah.
He plays an old man. It's a real stretch.
he plays a cranky old goat, and I'm sorry, that's a little bit typecasting, but sure.
Oh. Matthew Harried, who doesn't have a photo, played Pudge the Penguin. He's fine, generic kid.
Yeah. Don Knotts.
Here's the problem I had with Don Knotts.
Yeah?
I stayed through the credits because all I could think of when hearing the turtle talk was, who's doing a bad Don Knotts impersonation?
Don Knotts was a bit long in the tooth at this point, and you can hear it. His voice has changed, and it's not great.
Yeah, I didn't think it was him. So.
And they don't give him enough to do that's funny.
No, but he was also like, he must have been close to 80 at that point. Mm. So, and then he had a singing voice, which is fine.
And but the legendary Frank Welker. Frank Welker's in this.
As soon as I heard the voice, I knew it was him.
Yep. He's the Farley Wink, the Hollywood agent. He's fine. He's in one scene and vanishes forever.
Yeah. He's been playing Freddy from Scooby-Doo since 1969.
Yeah.
I think he recently passed. I can't remember. I don't think so, but I think he finally had to give up that role, but he'd been playing it for like 40 years.
Yeah. Yeah. In everything, the movies, the TV show, everything.
But Mark Dindal, who is the director, also voiced Max.
Oh yes. That's right.
Who I think actually might be the funniest character in the whole movie.
Darla, I think, is the best character. Max is the funniest. I agree with that.
I think he's actually meant to be a shaved gorilla.
Oh, you think? I thought he was sort of a riff on Frankenstein because he's got like a stitching scar on one part of his face.
I think the idea is that he is trying to make himself appear human and fit in. And that's why he's working with Darla. Well, we're going to get back to the symbolism, but his voice is great. They animate him well. He's funny. The character of Max is funny. But yeah, nice. So we have a lot of voice actors, and we have a lot of people who weren't voice actors in general, but did fine. So yeah.
I don't know. I still think I should sue this movie for copyright infringement on look, because let's face it, Max looks exactly like me. He's just a little shorter.
I often look up to you, 10 to 15 feet straight up.
That's right.
That gorilla-like face.
I don't know. I'd like to know where he got the tux. I have so much trouble finding one
little monkey pun him. That's Max, old monkey pun him.
Do you even know what that means?
Pun him, it means face, doesn't it?
Yeah, very good.
Why do you think I used it?
Good, Goyim. Have some mayonnaise.
Why do I know it? Because a very famous Jewish... Robin Williams wasn't Jewish. But he wanted to be. Was he?
I believe he was. At least one of his parents was.
Okay. Because I thought he was always not, and then used a lot of Yiddish. So we start off the film with Danny leaving home. There's a little opening song. And he actually says that he heads off to Hollywood with a bunch of useless junk. Which makes sense, but sure. I gotta say though, the opening song, the one that when the credits are running, and also there's another different song at the very end of the film, don't fit.
They don't match at all. They don't fit the tone, they don't fit the visuals. Most of the other songs do.
Yeah,
those two do not. I don't know where the hell they came from.
Well, the songs, I think, in the film are meant to be, even though the film takes place in, I guess, the 30s, because they keep referencing Gone with the Wind and The Wizard of Oz, and we'll come back to that. I think it's supposed to be 30s, 40s, just general golden age of Hollywood musical time period, which, of course, you know, Singing in the Rain, so on and so forth.
Sure.
And that's fine. Most of the songs generally fit that. But these are like the Peebo Bryson songs that pop up, and you're like, why are these literally don't make any sense. I don't understand.
That happened a lot in movies around the late 90s. They would just stick like what they thought were pop songs or songs that might get some airplay at the beginning and over the credits.
Well, that too, but also the late 90s, we had actually just the whole 90s. There was a whole slew of animated films coming out of places you weren't generally expecting them to come out of, because this was the whole Disney Renaissance thing with Little Mermaid and eventually Aladdin. Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin. And so we have films like Prince of Egypt. Do you remember that one?
Oh, yeah. That was ambitious.
Balto, a film I actually really like. Balto makes me cry. Oh. Iron Giant, which we did on the show.
Yeah, we done. Great movie.
Brave Little Toaster, one of the most depressing films I've ever seen.
That is a strange movie. It's so well done, but there's just something so weird about it.
Yeah. Space Jam.
Yeah. See our entire episode on Space Jam.
Thumbelina.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Get on the bird. Get on the damn bird.
And Ferngully. Yeah. So there were studios doing
curse you, Don Bluth.
Yeah, there was all sorts of studio jumping up and down going, hey, animated movies make a lot of money, we should do those. And this is sadly one of them, and I say sadly because Warner Brothers had a animation department that they had dismissed long ago. Yes, Space Jam brought them back, etc. And it was basically a case, the story goes, and I don't think it's true. The story was that in the early 60s, the head of Warner Brothers said something to the effect of, hey, we do those Mickey Mouse cartoons, right? Like, no, we do Bugs Bunny. Oh, we don't do Mickey Mouse? Oh, shut that down. Which, to be fair, the early 60s...
Oh, God, I hope that's not true.
Well, but the early 60s Warner Brothers cartoons were tired and dull.
This really does look like a Warner Brothers cartoon.
It does, and sadly, I know why it won that Annie Award. The animation is gorgeous.
It really is amazing. The movement is so fluid. The character design is really good.
Yeah, everything moves really, really fast. The way he dances is obviously based... They start with reality, and then they're like, yeah, what if we took Gene Kelly and animated him?
Yeah.
How fast? How much could he twist? How much could he stretch? It's all, like... Honestly, I think it's better than a lot of the period Warner Brothers cartoons because they had the budget, obviously. And you can tell these are people who love doing 2D animation. It really shows.
Yeah, the animation is a work of love.
Yeah. The thing, though, is that they decided to set the film in the 1930s, 40s, whatever, which is when the original Looney Tunes came out. And a lot of the things the Looney Tunes did would be to reference popular culture of the time.
Yep.
How did you feel about them setting this in the 30s and 40s and it being a Warner Brothers cartoon?
Honestly, I felt a little weird.
In what way?
They were trying a little too hard to do that same thing. They had a lot of caricatures of famous Hollywood figures. Like Joan Crawford and Cary Grant, Clark Gable.
Jimmy Durante.
Yep. Bunch of them. They weren't funny enough. They were just sort of there, and it felt very shoehorned in.
Well, I think also nobody knew who they were, right?
Yeah.
Because this was ostensibly a kids' movie.
Yeah, 1997.
Yeah, who the heck knew who Jimmy Durante was at that point?
Yeah, or
Betty
Clark
Davis.
Gable. Yeah.
I understood why they were trying to go for that nostalgia aspect, that golden age of Hollywood aspect. For me, though, it basically said, hey, remember all that stuff we did 50 years ago? We're still doing it.
Yeah, it was a bit too much of a callback.
Yeah, I'm not sure if setting it in the current day or closer to the current day would have helped or not, but it made the film, to me, feel stale.
I think you had to keep it that way because the whole tone of this is so innocent.
Mm-hmm.
And so, gee, you just have to believe and try real hard. And
I gotta believe.
You can do anything. I want to be a dentist.
And Herbie wants to be a dentist.
Yep. And you couldn't do that in modern Hollywood where everyone's bitter and cynical and overworked and everyone works at a Starbucks.
Well, I think you could if it was just a kid's film, but I think they were trying to tread that narrow
line. Well, they wanted to throw in stuff that for the adults. That's obvious. I figured that's why they had the references to old Hollywood. That's a little thing for the parents, so they old don't doze off.
Hollywood.
Very old Hollywood.
60 years before this. That's a long ways to go.
What did you think of the songs? Not the beginning and the opening, but the songs within the movie.
The songs are fun and catchy and really unmemorable.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt. They also sound very standard to me.
Well, every it's theme, Randy Newman.
Yeah, but not just standard for Randy Newman, but standard for any kids' cartoon, any kind of anything for, that they do for children. It's all like, oh, you just have to try, and I'm going to be a star, and happy, happy this.
Yeah.
What'd you think of the villain song, Big and Loud, the one from that Darla sings?
It may be the best song in the film.
That isn't saying a lot, because I got to say, that song. I was really looking for, when she starts up, I was like, oh, this is going to be good. Because she is so over the top and so crazy villain and so much fun. I thought the song was kind of meh.
I think the reason it doesn't work is she's not singing about her. She's
It's not explaining anything. It's not giving us a picture of her. Why does she hate all the animals so much? Why is she like this?
I think also we just want to see her let loose, all the way loose. And yeah. She can't do that if she's trying to convince Danny to go do something. She's still got to be nice. And I think we needed that Mother Gothel song where she's just like off the charts, you know. Mm. And the Mother Gothel song, to be fair, itself isn't that memorable, but it is this perfect Broadway moment in the middle of Tangled where you're like, I don't know who this actress
Mother
is,
knows
but
best.
If she is not on Broadway, I'd be amazed.
She's a Broadway singer, yeah.
We wanted to see Darla just sing about Darla and why things are annoying her and why things should be the way she thinks they should be. And yeah, that's the thing that I think didn't work in that song. It works well. The visuals are fun. Watching her face twitch as she's trying to be nice is actually really funny. But it doesn't quite go there.
Her facial expressions are one of the most fun things in there.
Yeah.
It's just, she is hilarious. Yeah.
Yeah.
Max's voice is to be what the best is. Make it hot, Miss Dimples. Like, wow.
Well, also they do this thing where they have set his teeth in stone and his lips are just animated around them. Yeah. So they are clenched shut.
He never opens his mouth. Yeah.
No. And he's a lot of fun.
He really is.
Speaking of characters, I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Warner Brothers. You can say it's Turner, but at the time it's Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
What do you think about the decision to not use any of Warner Brothers' stable of characters?
I understood that. Okay. Because the second you do that, you change it to, this is, it's a Bugs Bunny cartoon. I don't care if Bugs isn't in it. You look at it and you go, it's a Bugs Bunny cartoon. There's Daffy. There's somebody. And they were clearly trying for something else.
Yeah.
I respect the attempt. Honestly, I think maybe it would have made the movie a lot better if they had brought in a few of the original stables. And if they had brought in, well, I don't know, was Mel Blanc still doing voice work by then?
I think he died in the 90s, so he wouldn't have been. But his son, Noel, doing voices. So, I mean, and there's been people who picked it up. There's some people doing them now that are actually just as good as Mel Blanc. It's just that they weren't doing all of them. I don't know, because they used to put Bugs in, like, now Bugs is this character, or Daffy is now Robin Hood, or whatever.
Right.
It was just, it seems so weird to me. It's like, you have all these characters over, there's Bugs, Speedy Gonzales, Sylvester, you're not going to use any of them. Okay, all right, I get it. But the thing is that none of the personalities, with the exception of Darla, they don't have that presence that all of the other stable of characters do.
No, they all are very central casting.
Yeah.
Okay, send me up a cat who's like a cockeyed Optimus Gene Kelly type. Oh, send me out a world-weary character, grouchy old man character, hyper-optimist character, cute kid character. By the way, do you notice 10 years before Happy Feet, this movie gives us a tap dancing penguin.
Yeah. I would like to have known the reasoning behind that, because it seems odd. You have this property. Maybe it's because of Space Jam. I don't know. But it's like, you have this property. Why aren't you using it? But if you notice in the opening credits, there were 6 story people and 4 screenplay writers, which is always a good sign.
It's going to be good. Yep. More writers, more talent.
Yeah. I have another question for you.
Yeah.
Do you think, in its own clumsy way, this film was trying to tackle racism?
As a sort of, we need something a little heavier. Let's do racism. Yeah, that's easy. There's a little of that. I mean, there's the whole how animals are treated.
Yeah.
Except is that racism? That's speciesism.
Well, I know, but you could easily substitute people of color in Hollywood. Sure. I just am not comfortable with the idea of deciding that they're depicted by animals and everybody isn't. I'd really rather everyone was animals and no one likes, I don't know, horses, you know. Well, no, we couldn't do that because everyone loves Bumpy. Right, Bumpy?
Bumpy?
It just, because of the history of Hollywood, and we're doing the history of Hollywood, I wondered, are you trying to do this? I can't tell. Mm. You know, like everybody's equal? Are you, I guess. Mm. It was weird. I couldn't quite tell. Yeah.
So. But it's okay because it's all solved at the end with a song and dance number.
Well, it starts off that way. And actually, the opening dance, again, it's not memorable, but it's energetic and upbeat and fun.
That's pretty to look at.
Unlike the later parts of the film, which become a real downer.
Yeah. Normally, the third act, you have the liar reveal.
Okay.
Everyone gets mad at Danny because he tried something, it was sabotaged, and it didn't work. So, as opposed to liar revealed, he is complete idiot revealed.
Kinda.
And everyone acts so betrayed. It's like, this isn't his fault.
No.
It felt very forced.
You know what I wanted to see?
What?
I wanted to see, you remember that Saturday Night Live skit where they're like, here's the original ending to It's a Wonderful Life? I wanted to see that. Let's go eat Darla. Work harder, boys. Let's tear her apart.
Yeah, bloody come on. Chunks. We got an elephant on our side.
Yeah. So it's, that's what happens when you have 4 writers and 6 story people.
I think so. Did you understand the last line that Max has? He's been, you know, banished on a floating, an inflatable Darla, which admittedly was a fun image.
It was.
And he's drifting across. Apparently he's made it to France, despite the fact he's going the wrong direction. He should have hit like China because they're in California.
Right. The winds go west to east, Max.
Yeah. So I see. So he went across the entire country.
Yeah.
And then, all right, sure. Why not? And he just says, very mystical. What the hell does that mean?
I don't know.
I didn't get that at all. Anybody out there know? I don't know. It was a von Stroheim joke or a...
Oh, because that's what this film needed to do.
Yeah.
It needed to end on an Eric von Stroheim joke.
What?
No. That's Otto Preminger. That's the other one.
Same thing. Weird German director.
Yeah, only one weird German director played a villain on Batman.
Well, they missed a real opportunity because I bet von Stroheim would have been great.
Is that real with an A or 2 E's? Yeah.
I don't get that. Also, one of the things that annoys me at the end is what part of the message is when they're all saying, our lives here suck, and it's always going to suck. And he just says, you know, then why are you still here? Which, by the way, is a pretty good question.
Mm.
And you understand the answer is the punchline to the old joke. What? And leave show business?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, really? You could have done that better.
Yeah.
You could have done that better. And it's. I thought it was weak.
I could see that. I just was like, I was sitting there watching the 2D animation and just like, wow, people even in the 90s were still capable of making this. And it's so beautiful and it's so well animated. And
I like the tricks they do with the lighting. The fact that when Danny's finally inspiring them all to sing and dance, they're all very drably lit. The colors are all muted. And when the music starts, they brighten, literally.
Yeah.
I know that's a little obvious, but I thought that was a nice touch, and it looked beautiful.
there was also very limited and very careful use of CG, and it was only for some of the vehicles to keep them solid. Yeah. I remember once I was watching a making of the 101 Dalmatians, and I always wondered about the car that Cruella de Vil drives, because it seems really solid, and it's like, this is the 60s. How are they doing this? They literally made a model of the car. They painted it white and drew outlines in black where the edges were, and they shot film of it driving around, and then they animated that, and they just like drew over that.
I'm so they rotoscoped it. Wow. Yeah. Okay.
I thought, you know what? Good for you. It's like those special effects in the opening of Escape from New York, where it's supposed to be this 3D image of New York, and it's literally just a bunch of cardboard boxes with glow tape on it. Nice. It's like, you know what? Good for you.
Yeah.
But you know what else is good for you? Is us coming to a conclusion about Cats Don't Dance. So let's do that thing.
The finish.
So Max.
So Mike. Damn it. Anyway, yes?
Nope. Max doesn't dance either, and it's a good thing. Mm. So you hadn't seen this film. You wanted to watch it.
I had never seen this film. I'd heard about it for years. I'd heard people talk about it.
I think I can guess, but what do you think about Cats Don't Dance?
I think it's nice to look at. I think it's kind of, honestly, it kind of makes me sad, because it's like, you guys could still do really good 2D animation then, and you threw it all away for the CG stuff. It's fine. The music is pleasant and utterly unmemorable. The performances are pleasant and utterly unmemorable. You know what got me, though? It's not that funny. The jokes don't land very hard, except for Darla and Max. Mm-hmm. They are hilarious.
If you would boil your review down to one word, I think I know what it would be. What would that one word be?
Meh.
Oh, I was thinking it was pleasant.
Yeah, that too. It was pleasant. It's harmless.
Mm.
If you want to park a kid in front of it for a while, it's bright and colorful and some movement and sound, and they'll be distracted.
Oh, there'll be a movement.
You can have a nap. But what about you? You liked it when you first saw it. How does it hold up?
I think I probably feel about the same way. I think I like it more than it deserves. Quite honestly, I just have a soft spot because it's so beautifully animated. It's really, really well animated. The action is spot on. The speed, the reactions, the facial expressions are all perfect Warner Brothers. You know, there's a bunch of the original shorts that weren't animated as well as this, and they were still funny.
Yeah.
The biggest laughs really are going to be with Darla and Max. They are the funniest. The main character, and this happens in so many films, you end up finding that the villain is way more interesting than the main character, because they've been sanded down so much to fit that hero has a thousand faces thing that we don't. I mean, Danny's a cat that wants to dance, but there's nothing particularly interesting about him.
Yeah.
Which is a shame. And unfortunately, that's pretty much true of the whole film. There's nothing particularly interesting about this film except the way it looks and the way it's animated, which is gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I like Singing in the Rain. It's one of my favorite feel-good movies. And this film doesn't borrow from it, but it wants to.
It wants you to think of that.
Yeah. So I would say, if you haven't seen it, if you're an animation fan, by all means, take a look. It's not going to probably end up being one of your favorite films.
Yeah.
But it does show what the Warner Brothers team could do at the time, given the budget, and they were able to do it. And again, we've mentioned this a few times, if you haven't seen The Day the World Blew Up or Exploded, whatever the Warner Brothers film that came out last year, it's actually funny.
It really is.
It was surprising. Enjoyable. So yeah, I'm waiting for that Coyote film. But what else I'm waiting for is Max to recount our new poll question.
And you'll be waiting for a long, long time.
This is Max scrolling to find it.
Nope, I've already got it.
Okay.
We want to know, who is your favorite cartoon animal? Is from TV or movies? Mike, obviously, is Tony the Tiger.
Oh, that's great. Oh, screwed that up.
And you can tell us by emailing us at us@maxmikemovies.com. You can also do as Herr Halbwitz does and point out any mistakes I make. Can you point out some that Mike made? I mean, I realize
I'd have to make one
for choice. It's like, not like you don't have any choices, but did you agree with us? Were you full of animal poo. Ooh, I'm so naughty. Do you have any ideas for other movies we should see, other series? Email us. Let us know. You can also go to our website, maxmikemovies.com, and leave a comment. You can find us on media
and
socialness.
Blue Sky.
And Blue Skies, Blue Skies.
Mr. Blue Sky.
Mr. Blue Sky. Yes, under Max Mike Movies, and we are on the podcast apps of our choice. Ours, you hear?
We have no control over it whatsoever.
Zero.
I'm waiting for to get another award, like we're number 22nd in podcasts about the color pink or something. I don't know.
Some of the stuff we get is so odd. Hey, did you know you're number 19th in children exercise video?
Yeah, we don't do video.
What? What? Well, you're frightening me. Stop it. But you can also join those such as my favorite little animated bunny rabbit, Doris Hempelmeyer, and call us at our fabulous hotline at 617-398-7266. That number, again, is 617-398-7266.
You could be our next real Julia Roberts.
You could. Ooh, who knows? But we are coming up to the end of this series. Yes, and it is Mike who will put the final bullet in the head of this adorable, fluffy series. So tell us, you cold-blooded bastard, what's our last movie?
Well, we actually decided to continue for 4 more episodes.
I decided no such thing.
Yeah, we did. 4 more episodes. I gotcha. It's what they call a hustle, baby.
Oh, I see. What sort of hustle?
A kung fu hustle. Hi-ya!
Flawless transition. Absolutely.
Hey, you write these things. Oh, that's right, you do. And you do it just as well as I do.
Oh, you take that back.
No.
We're going to watch Stephen Chow's Kung Fu Hustle. All right.
We are going to watch Stephen Chow's Kung Fu Hustle. I thought we should do at least one foreign film. Mm. We should do one film that had some actual people of color in it. I thought that might be nice.
Yep. That's a good thought.
And I haven't seen it in too long. Yeah. Kung Fu Hustle. Is it any good? I mean, if you've seen one Hong Kong action film, you've seen them all. Right? Am I right? To find out if I'm right, tune in next week for Kung Fu Hustle.
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.
Spoiler alert, he's wrong!